You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Still bottled, still bottled.
Welcome into another edition of Still Potable Live. We are here on the CLNS YouTube channel. You can make sure to subscribe there to check us out weekly. Check us out at patreon.com/stillpotable if you want to check out our show Monday through Friday ad-free. Best Celtics podcast analysis you can find out there. But today, myself and Jay King, we have a very special guest joining us for the show. Suichi Tirada of masslive.com. And we bring him in especially for today because I can guarantee you no one in the Celtics
room watched
more Xavier Tillman than Mr. Sparty himself, Suichi Tirada. And damn it, I don't know. We don't know when we're going to see Tillman. We don't know if it's going to be out of the All-Star break here or if he's going to need a little bit longer to get this knee ready to go. But he's probably going to play and he's probably going to make an impact. So we need to get the inside scoop from Suichi. But first off, Suichi, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Part two, I better never leave that promo at the end. Whenever I see the little preview and I see my little face, I'm like, I better never leave that. I feel like I've earned it.
It's top building. Only the big names get that type of building.
All right. So,
but
you're only the second multiple-time guest, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Who's the other one?
Forsberg's the other one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Forsberg's been on like four times. It's just kind of ridiculous. He's basically a third host. Or a fourth host.
Yeah.
He's grandfathered in, like you are out of winning plays here. But but yeah, so just give, obviously, Suichi, you know, as written here at masslive.com for quite 3 years now in the C's, but before his days at MassLive, Suichi both went to MSU and covered MSU basketball back. I believe, was it 2 years of the Tillman era, Suichi? Like, you were done by the time he was a junior, right?
Yes, because he was at MSU 3 years and I did his first 2 years. I didn't really cover basketball back then. I was more of a football guy because it's the Big Ten and everything. But yeah, so I was around. Yeah, I remember. He came in the same class as Jaren Jackson Jr. Little fun fact for you.
Well, there you go.
That's a ridiculous front court defensively in college.
Well, Jaren was one and done, so he wasn't actually around. And then Tillman didn't really become a contributor until he was a sophomore. But fun little fact, I believe, I'm like 90% sure they were like best friends. And then when Tillman got drafted to Memphis, obviously Jaren was on the team, so it was kind of a reunion. I think Jaren was his best man at his wedding. So that's kind of a little fun detail for you guys.
There you go. So this is why we brought Suichi on.
Right.
Suichi's such a good man, Xavier Tillman.
But yeah, so where do you want to, again, you clearly have a lot of nuggets here on him. I guess we'll start on the floor here. And I'm sure you've been keeping rough tabs on him from afar in Memphis during his career, like you do with probably most of MSU guys. But where from that standpoint do you see him kind of sticking out the most, I guess, here when he does come into the equation and potentially like the areas where he could potentially be a boost to the big man rotation on the bench that, you know, we don't, that we haven't heard about yet?
Yeah, I guess with Tillman, when he came out at, from MSU, obviously his defense was never Tillman was pretty much just stopping like these very quality Big Ten big men from a defensive standpoint. Like Luka Garza struggled against him. And if you guys remember Luka Garza in college, like he
was Luka Garza was a monster.
Dude, yeah, right? And now you kind of see that.
He still gets buckets. He can't stop.
Yeah, no. He still gets buckets. So in the college game, he was great, right? But Tillman gave him a lot of trouble. And it wasn't just Garza. It was even like Lamar Stevens, who he obviously got traded for Penn State and everything like that. Like he was having this stretch. And like defensively, I never thought he was going to be a problem. But offensively, it was a little bit of a question mark. Like he was like, you know, like he was fine for like a college big man, but I just didn't know how that would translate to the next level. But when you look at the Celtics, like, I don't think that's necessarily going to be something they ask for him, right? Like, it's going to be kind of like a Luke Cornette role in the sense of, like, Luke doesn't really shoot threes anymore. And I remember seeing a few tweets being like, you don't want Tillman shooting threes when he got traded to Celtics. And I'm like, that probably is not going to be a problem. Like, if David Tillman is shooting consistent threes, I think something probably went wrong in the set or the possession or whatever. So I think that's where you feel good about the fit, especially. I think it'll be kind of interesting to see how Tillman is incorporated into the rotation once he's like ready to go and acclimated and everything. I'm not sure how much he'll be able to do that this season, right? Just because he hasn't played yet, already passed the All-Star break and everything. But for the most part, like I like the fit. I think, right, like it's Grant, Ryan, Memphis or anything, but like this is a tough dude. And I think one of the question marks going into the playoffs for me with the previous roster was just like, how is that big man rotation going to look if Luke Cornette is not necessarily part of it, right? Just because we haven't seen that so much in the playoffs. But I think you look at a guy like Tillman, he's played in a number of playoff games with Memphis. Like he had that big game against the Lakers. I want to say it was like 22-13 in game two last year. Like you feel good about him. That's not necessarily being like he's going to give you something every playoff game, but like he's played in big games during his NBA career and during his time at Michigan State. So I think all of those things you feel good about going forward.
Yeah, he's kind of playoff, like his defense is playoff proven too, which is important. You're not like bringing in Mike Muscala and wondering if he's going to be able to like contribute to your defense. I think Tillman is a guy that no matter what, he's going to be able to hold up physically. He's going to be able to switch. He's going to give you another option against the really great big men in the league, of which there are a few, but the guys that right now only Al Horford can handle. And then the other piece that I want you to touch on a little bit more, he just kind of seems like a great teammate and somebody who's all about winning. That's something that Brad brought up, and he kind of said it in the most coach way possible, which is that he said, I think he plays basketball for the right reasons. Which is such a Brad Stevens coach saying, but I do think it kind of encapsulates what Tillman's all about. He's not going to worry about anything except, am I making the team better right now?
And, yeah.
So what did you learn about him while you said you didn't cover basketball much at that point, but while being around him when he was in college?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think you can kind of see that. Like, he's very soft-spoken. I think during his first media availability, everyone was like, yo, we can't hear him. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of forgot about that, honestly. I haven't heard him speak in a little bit. But yeah, in terms of, like, the teammate part, like, I think the Celtics were very intentional with who they got in terms of, like, right, like, Tillman's going to be a free agent, but maybe it's something, it's one of those things where it's just like, okay, let's see how you play first and et cetera, go from there. But the thing I remember from college about Tillman, and my timeline's going to be messy, like I graduated 5 years ago now. But like, I remember a big part of like kind of the narrative
that's
around
kind of a humble brag there. How young you are.
I'm not trying to do that, but that's okay. What was it good? A big part of his narrative was like, I believe he had a kid when he was like still a teenager. So kind of like Jason in the sense of like, you know, like a young father and everything, not to compare the two or anything, but Xavier always kind of gave me this like old man, like mature vibe. I'm not sure if you guys have picked it up. I didn't know he had three kids. I think that's what he said at his first media avail with us. But he got like married pretty young and everything like that. So it just seems like he he's like a couple years younger than me, but it always felt like he had his life more put together. I mean, I'm sure it helps playing Division I basketball and playing in the NBA, et cetera, but like you could kind of tell. And I think in a locker room, like you need like a mature voice like that. And like, you know, I specifically remember the day of the trade, I saw some graphic, Michigan State versus Duke in the 2019 Elite Eight. I was like, man, it's been a long time since we've had, you know, Michigan State has had like a good big man since Xavier Tillman. Then he got traded to the Celtics later that day. And I was like, damn, Brad is kind of toying with my heart right now. But that's the reason I bring that up is just like, it's I think he's going to fit in the locker room well. Like, that was never an issue at MSU, but I think like that maturity never hurts, I think, especially when you're speaking about like a locker room that is a very volatile thing, right? Like, you know, like we've seen, you know, like with the Nuggets and like Bones Highland, like everyone's like, why is Bones Highland being like kind of like making headlines or like drama, and then they traded them away and everything. So like it's a very volatile thing. And I think
he's been really good with the Clippers though. Has it
been? Yeah, right. So
away since they banished him from their entire team prior to All-Star break, which is a wild move. But yeah, and I think for the Celtics too. You talk about the locker room being a delicate.
Because, right, Celtics have a good thing going, and I don't think Xavier Tillman is necessarily going to mess that up.
Yeah, and in their locker room, like, it's been a totally no-nonsense locker room. If they brought in, like, I know people were very high on Lonnie Walker, and a lot of Celtics fans were in my mentions about Lonnie Walker. And I'm not saying anything about Lonnie Walker as a person. He wants to go get buckets. He wants to do his own thing. He's not just like a totally selfless basketball player in the same way that Xavier Tillman is. And so I think it was important for Brad Stevens to not rock the boat and to bring in somebody who's going to be cool with kind of whatever happens. And that maturity, like has been a very mature team. Like, this has been the most drama-free season I've ever covered by far, to the point where it's almost boring.
Like, well, I remember 2 years ago, like, I think it was after the Chicago game, since I'm in Chicago right now. Remember, like, 5 games into the season, like, Marcus said what he said about Jason and Jalen? Like, that was 2 years ago, 2 seasons ago. And, like, it's just crazy to me how different it is. And, like, I remember before I was on the beat hearing all, like, the Kyrie headlines or, like, the Terry headlines and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's I feel like, you know, I mean, Jason literally went on the record, right, earlier this season being, like, you know, that expletive sucked, right? Right around that 2018-19, right? So I think maybe there were a little bit of growing lessons there.
You can say shit. It's okay.
Okay, that's good to know. I was going to ask that. But yeah, he pretty much said this shit sucked, right? And like, I think Jason and Jalen kind of understood that, and they got, you know, they're going to get their bags. Like, they just want to go and win now, especially since they've been so close to it.
Yeah, and those guys have kind of set the tone. And I don't think they were ready for that earlier in their career. Like, Tatum used to always bring up individual accolades. He would always say, I want to be in the All-Star game. I want to do this, do that. And granted, he's reached a point where he's crossed off everything but MVP from that list. He's been 2-time first-team All-NBA. There's not much more for him to get. But the difference from him being focused on all that stuff to now him just being like, yeah, it's all about the team. And even the way that he calls out players after games, calls out teammates to praise them after games, that's different from when he was younger. And I think he and Jalen both, and Jalen too, we can put him in the same basket. Like, he's kind of talked about how, you know, it's okay to him when he doesn't get the ball much, and it's okay to him when, you know, the Celtics are going away from him, because he just wants to play with everyone to play with the right intentions. And to me, their evolution and their maturity to get to the place where they are now is a major reason why everyone on the Celtics has taken on that identity. There are other guys on the team. Like, I don't think it's ever in Derek White or Jrue Holiday's nature to say anything wrong or do anything wrong. But, like, when your top two players are both making it very clear they don't care about that shit, then that stuff matters and that stuff resonates, and it's hard to be, you know, the eighth or ninth guy on that team and think about yourself when the guys in front of you are making it very clear that that's not what it's about to them.
Yeah, right. The day Derek White rocks the boat is hell's gonna freeze over that.
What
day.
If he just came in and just shitted on everyone? Like, Joe fucked that up last night, guys.
Mr. White, Richard White's gonna be like, what the hell happened to my son? Right.
He'll be taking him,
yeah, taking him apart. And to just one thing, Jay, to go off your point that I've really been impressed by with Jalen this year is the defensive end of the court and taking oftentimes the best, you know, guarding the best player like what he did against Luka and Dallas and all those things. Like, I think that's one of those pieces of sacrifice where it's like, yeah, I may not be getting the ball as much. My counting stats are down. I'm taking fewer shots, et cetera, but I'm making an impact on the other end. And I think it seemed like that was very intentional. And it seems like, to me, it was very smart just because you lose a guy like Marcus Smart. And sure, you added Jrue Holiday and everything. Like, he was going to be part of the equation. But Jalen kind of being that, you know, one of the top two guys, one of the leaders of the locker room, and be like, I'm going to invest a lot on this team. Like, Joe Mazzulla says it all the time. Like, when your best players want to play defense, it's just that much easier. And we've seen around the league what happens when the opposite goes, when, you know, your best player is not necessarily locked in on defense, right? And so I think that's a big part of the equation where you can buy into this team and you have this great culture. And it's just, you know, like I said, growing pains, I think, for these guys, Jalen and Jason, right? Like, they're in their early 20s. But I think now that, as Jalen says, you're entering their athletic primes, like, you can be hopeful that obviously this year is a great contention window, but it'll stay open as long as these guys keep that same mindset going forward.
All right, let's get back more to Tillman here, get back more into the Celtics second half with Jalen and Jason talk. That's what we just got into. After we hear from our sponsor here, FanDuel. Get buckets with your first bet on FanDuel, America's number one sports book, because right now new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $150 if your bet wins. You can bet on all your favorite NBA players and teams with quick bets, live same game parlays, exclusive props, and much more. So just visit FanDuel.com/Boston and shoot your shot. FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NBA. MA 21 Imprez. 21 Imprez Plus and Present in MA. Hope is here. First online, real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling helpline, ma.org, or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. Back here on YouTube, we're live with Suichi Tirada. Make sure you check out patreon.com/stillpotable if you want to get the show daily ad-free Monday through Friday with myself, Jay King, and Sam Jam Packard. We're talking again, Suichi Tirada here of masslive.com about the Xavier Tillman era, which is yet to begin in with the Celtics here. Suichi's in Chicago awaiting potentially, I guess the injury report will come out at some point today. We'll figure out what his status is, but yeah. As far as off-court stuff, behind-the-scenes stuff, you were talking about a little bit with Tillman in terms of what, you know, like the maturity he already kind of has, already being a dad already when he was a kid in college. Is there anything else from his time at MSU that kind of stuck out to you from a, you know, on-court, off-court standpoint, like a leadership in the locker room? Obviously, he sounds like a guy who kind of does, like you said, does what he needs to, does what the team needs him to, won't really rock the boat, but what, if anything else there kind of sticks out from you, from what you saw from him?
Yeah, I guess the number one thing is he was not this very heralded recruit coming out of high school. I believe he was like 84 or something. I just looked this up. And yeah, he was 85. You know, he was 106 in the composite 247 sports ranking. Like, that's not necessarily someone you expect to go early second round like he did 3 years later. And so I always thought that was kind of cool. Like, he, like I said, my memory's a little fuzzy, but like, I remember his rookie year, his freshman year, he wasn't necessarily this guy playing a lot. He had Jaren on the team. He had a lot of big men in front of him. So it was mostly a developmental year, but I was really impressed at the end of his sophomore season, which would have been 2019, when MSU made the Final Four. It kind of felt like Tillman unlocked a lot defensively for them. He was sixth man of the year in the Big Ten, but he basically, what happened was a starter in front of him got hurt. He like broke his hand or something. And so Tillman was kind of push into a starting role, and MSU kind of got rolling. And like, that's typical Izzo teams and everything, but like, I thought what he did defensively and what the dirty work especially was like what really impressed me. Like, he added more to his offensive game his junior year. He was more of a leader his junior year, but like, the fact that he was able to kind of step in, right, later in his sophomore season and be like a starter on a Final Four team. Like that to me impressed me so much, just because he played sparingly as a freshman. So I think the developmental piece you feel good about, just like this kid who was not a top 100 recruit, local kid from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and he was able to kind of do all these things. So, and the only other thing I would add is like I said, like the dirty work, Tillman will probably do that, right? And I think that's why he fits the Celtics, because like at this point, the Celtics don't need somebody who's going to put up points in bunches, right? Brad Stevens has talked about that over and over again. So to have a guy who's willing to, you know, sacrifice, who's willing to just go get that extra board, who's willing to, you know, take a difficult big man matchup and everything. And as you said, B-Rob, I think him being a little bit more of like a bruiser in comparison to like Al, I think really works out well. Just because like he's not necessarily like a big guy, he's only 6'7", listed as 6'7". So it's like, I didn't realize he was that short, honestly. I was looking at that when he got traded. I was like, oh, was he really? I was like, oh, I thought he was like 6'10 or something. So I think though it adds another element to the Celtics in terms of like, yeah, you can spell Al maybe a little bit more in the first round or something like that when you're up big, and you can still feel confident with Tillman still in there. So between all those things, like, you know, I rooted for this guy in college for the most part. Like, I feel good about him coming to the Celtics. And it's kind of cool to be like, oh, hey, there he is again. Like, I remember covering you in college. And one of the headlines I wrote in college for some reason was like winning the Battle of Bulge or something strange. So that I thought that was weird and funny. So
let's take up that headline. But no, it's funny that you mentioned the, like you said, the developmental part of him here. And that's like, it's kind of the sneaky part of this deal now. It's like, obviously, this is a deal for the present. As big man insurance or potentially a wild card addition there, but they have bird rights on him. He's only making $1.9 million a year. He's obviously going to get a sizable raise next year, but that's something that could conceivably be within the Celtics budget, especially if he shows that he can kind of mesh well with this group there. And he's still fairly young. There's, I don't know how much upside there is left, but this team moving forward is going to need, you know, pieces that don't break the bank to fill out the rest of the bench, or even just pieces that you can considerably, you know, movable salary too, like for down the line, because there's not going to be many of those on this roster either outside of the top six. So to get a guy, it seems like, who can check that box and also not be gunning for himself in that contract year at the same time. It's like, it's hard to check both of those boxes, but it seems like the Celtics may have done that here.
Yeah, and it could be like kind of like a pay and Pritchard situation, right? Where you're kind of able to lock him down for cheap money, and like who knows what Pritchard's future holds. Like you said, B-Rob, I think he's a great tradable contract that has some value. So maybe Tillman is kind of that along the lines, but like he's only 25 years old after his rookie deal. Like I think you're about to get the prime years of his years of his athletic career, and you can get him down for pretty cheap. And I think it is kind of fascinating when you think about it. Like Tillman probably isn't going to be, like we said, like he's not going to be like, I need a lot of points. Like I need to show out like Elijah Walker, because I think he understands like his value comes in doing the dirty work. And if he just is able to show that on a big stage, you know, like the East Finals or the Finals, hopefully with the Celtics, like I think he'll get his payday. And maybe that's something the Celtics have already loosely talked about in terms of like, hey, as long as like things are good, like we can talk long-term, and maybe he feels a little bit more security in that regard.
And especially with the Al Horford X factor of like, how much longer is he going to play?
Sure.
You know, that's just something that's going to be, I don't want to say looming over, because he hasn't really aged at all, and he continues to be a legitimate player and a guy who spreads the court, the rare big man who spreads the court and can guard and really guard both at the rim and on the perimeter. But he's 37 years old. Realistically, he will not play for the Celtics forever, I don't think.
CJ, I don't know.
And so it's funny, because I remember when they brought in Robert Williams, and it was like, this could be the succession plan for Al Horford. And then it's like years and years later, and Al has come back, I think, for a second stint in Boston since then. And Rob is gone, and it's just Al still playing like 25 minutes a night. 20 minutes a night, whatever it is, and still playing at a super high level. And it's like, this dude, they've been looking for succession plans for half a decade now, more than half a decade.
Very Tom Brady-esque.
Yeah. But now the succession plan is for like a backup big, not necessarily for a high level big. Although Tillman, his defense has been super high level this year. Like if you look at the advanced numbers, he's right up near the top in a lot of those numbers. I think EPM ranks him as the third best defender behind, I think it's Isaiah Hartenstein and Jonathan Isaac so far. And
Hartenstein, I would not expect to see that name.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He's had a really good year though.
He really has. Like, and that's someone I feel like the Celtics may were looking at him a couple years ago when he was a free agent here, but that's one of those deals that obviously has hit well for the Knicks and now put them in a spot now where they're, despite their injuries, are right there in the Eastern Conference playoff picture.
Yeah, buddy. Although Randall said surgery is not ruled out, so
ooh, that's didn't see that one.
Yeah. So hopefully he can avoid that. They're having a good year.
Do we have any closing Tillman thoughts or should we pivot to the second half of the season here?
Not too much other than the fact that Tillman is the last great Michigan State big man. And I miss that era of Michigan State basketball a lot.
I'm just going to depress you to remind you that era is gone now. Just watching
You guys don't even understand, man. Right before COVID hit, Michigan State was hitting its stride. March, they're on a 5-game winning streak. Like four of them are quad one wins and they were rolling. And then COVID hits. And that is still one of the biggest what ifs in recent Michigan State history. So seeing Xavier Tillman, I'm like, damn. What if, man? What if? That's my only closing thought. What if the Michigan State Spartans could have won a natty in 2020? I would have been a much happier man, but that's okay.
What could have been?
You're going to be insufferable wearing all your Spartans gear, chatting about him with
there's another B member who wears a player. It's alma mater. I'm just saying. Gary Washburn loves to wear his Cal gear. So I'm just saying, this is a double stand. I have told Gary this. So let it be known.
Yeah. I wear my Skidmore gear sometimes, but they don't have any alums on the team. Where did you go, B-Rob?
Boston College.
I knew that.
The BC guy, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last, maybe Sean Williams is probably the last Celtic in wearing Celtics green, I think, from BC. But I don't think he lasted maybe a month.
Yeah, he didn't. They're okay this year. They're not terrible this year. Quentin Post is good.
Yeah, I haven't honestly watched any of them, but they started to turn things in the right direction the last year or two.
They had a fun little run in the ACC tournament, I remember. Yeah.
And they got Bill O'Brien as their football
player. Yeah, right?
Look it up for the Eagles.
MSU actually plays BC in football this fall, so B-Rob and I will have some beef that week.
Get ready.
Is it in is it at BC?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Ooh. I've already told all my friends to come. I was like, you guys gotta come.
Sweetie has friends everywhere. Sweetie truly has friends all across the globe. It's actually one of the more impressive things I've ever seen. The man has a lot of friends.
People say I'm a friendly guy. What can I say?
All right. You're out there in Chicago right now, Sweetie. Two game road trip out of the gate here. This is actually a sneaky, nice stretch out of the break here for the Celtics as far as entertaining games go. Mm-hmm. We've got, the Bulls have been playing better lately. The Knicks will be shorthanded, but they're good there. And then a lot of fun. I mean, I think we got the Warriors, I think the Mavs, Philly, Dallas, and then
Cleveland, nice big Denver, Phoenix.
That's
like a kind of bang 6-game stretch.
Yeah. So it's really coming out of the gate here, the Celtics have a nice little cushion, we know. But they will be tested here out of the gate. What are you looking for here outside of just scouting Tillman? Closely out of the
watch this
out there, just what do you expect
out of Jaden Springer? Whatever he plays, it's gonna have to be in a blowout probably initially, but in terms of the second half, I'm curious to see how quickly they lock up the number one seed. It could be with 2 weeks left in the season, honestly. They're kind of lapping the field right now, right? What is it, six and a half game lead, I think. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. I guess I'm at this point in the season, I am kind of looking for them to maybe lock in a little bit more with the playoffs so close. I think they did a pretty good job going into the All-Star break in a 6-game winning streak, and you felt good about it. I think people like saw a few more losses and they were like, what's going on here? And I'm just like, that's just, this isn't like the, you know, 15-16 Warriors, like 73-9, like teams go through this, like you're just going to lose games, right? Like, you know, the Denver game, I was like, eh, that's a clutch game. And, you know, the process was okay, as Joe Mazzulla says. So I think that's, but yeah, I think I want to see a little bit more tinkering going into the playoffs. And to their credit, I think the last time I came on this, like, you could kind of see Joe Mazzulla tinkering a little bit more with like the 2-1-2 zone and like these defensive schemes and like maybe a little bit more pressure, et cetera. Like, I would like to see a little bit of that more for the Celtics, just because like I still think these are valuable reps. One thing I'm curious about, I guess, is to see if Mazzulla tinkers a little bit more with the rotation, just to see like how certain pieces fit. But for the most part, like, I think if you're a Celtics fan, obviously one, you feel great. I just don't have too much to criticize at this point, just because like the play has been so good and the vibes have been so good. It's just like very hard to be negative, to be like, yeah, they lost a few games, but like, not, you know, like the East especially is so like, it's just kind of like, I don't know what to make of it, especially with like Philly and Embiid. You got the Bucks free falling, Doc Rivers going on this crazy media tour. The Knicks with Randall, I'm not 100% sure. Cleveland, it sounds like Donovan Mitchell's going to leave once the contract is up, right? Like, there's just a lot of question marks. It just feels like this is the Celtics year to at least to like get a relatively easy path, I guess, to the finals, just because, you know, when they did make the finals in 2022, like, it was a very hard road. But I think locking up that number one seed and actually like guaranteeing yourself like an easier path, I think matters, just because you can only win so many 7-game, 6-game series before it bites you. And we've seen that over the past couple of years.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They do need to take care of business in the playoffs.
They
have played the longest series of all time. They are incapable, with the exception of the Brooklyn Nets series. I believe every other series they've played the last 2 years has gone 6 or 7 games. Most of them 7. Like, they've just played an obscene amount of playoff games over the last 2 years. So, yeah, take care of business. Make sure you close out series quicker. Make sure you don't drop games when you allow James Harden to hit a game winner when Joel Embiid is out. Make sure when you're up 10 in the fourth, you close it shit out. That's that they got to do that. And I to your point about kind of amping it up, to me, it was like they had to survive January and February. They had a ton of games in January. It was just kind of like, let's get through this. Let's escape this. Let's tread water. And they did that really well. I think they led the league in net rating over that time. We were very close to it. Maybe the Cavs did. But like, they didn't play their best basketball for most of that stretch. So now lock in. If you could think back to last year, they came out of the All-Star break and sucked. They were just, they were really bad. Their starters stopped playing defense for a while. They just kind of let go of some of their habits that they had earlier in the season. It was probably their worst stretch of basketball coming out of the All-Star break. So can you be mature enough to handle it differently this time? Can you be mature enough to start, like Sweetie said, taking it up a notch and getting ready for the playoffs?
And I think the schedule kind of helps in that regard, right? Like, I remember before the Denver game, I asked Kristoff, I was like, how do you guys combat with the dog days? He's like, yeah, there's a little bit of that, but like for this game, like, this is a lot of fun, right? Like, this is like, these are the games you get up for. So I think having this little stretch, it's going to be tough, and like, you're going to be on national TV a lot, which is, I think, a good thing for some guys, right? But I think that helps you lock in. And like you said, Jay, like, I just don't think it's very sustainable by going 6 or 7 games. Like, it's just like, right, even like the 08 Celtics, they had, you know, I think, what was it, like a 6-7 game series in the first round, and then like 7 games again, and then 6, and then they got they beat the Lakers. It's just, that's just a lot, and you're putting so much, like, not to say like unnecessary miles, but like, you're putting a lot of just miles in your body.
You can absolutely say that.
You can say, and mental stress too. The mental stress has to be just as high as the physical.
And like, you got guys like Al Horford, like, you don't want him right, playing an extra 30 minutes in like a game six that you maybe didn't need if you beat Trae Young in game five on your home court. And you know, residual tiredness and all that kind of stuff. So I think the Celtics, if I was a fan, like what I would really want to see is like get rid of this narrative about the Celtics playing down to their competition in the playoffs, just because, like we've said, that's been an issue. And if you had to criticize something, it would be that. And then you put yourself in situations where you're sure it's game seven at home against Miami, but then one Jason Tatum ankle injury, suddenly you lose, right? You can't lose your margin of error because you are afforded that as a number one seed in the East. But the more you kind of dick around, shit happens. Caleb Martin can go off. Like, shit happens. You just got to make sure that even if Caleb Martin goes off, you have enough margin of error to get the job done.
I love how you were say expletive earlier. Now you're like, dick around. Shit happens. Let him rip. That was quick learning by you.
Thank you. Second time, I'm a vet now. Third time, I'll be seeing some unhinged shit.
To your point on like the playoffs, CT, like this, the positioning / standings watching is going to be pretty fun in the second half of the season here. For the Celtics, but like the rest of the East, like everything is on the table as far as who from the play-in tournament to who falls to that 4-5 slot. It could be like a star-studded path to the second and third round for the Celtics, or it could be Orlando, Indiana, and whoever else.
They could realistically get like the Heat in round one, the Bucks in round two. like that could actually happen. That could be their path. And or they could get Embiid back healthy after his knee issue in the first round. Mm-hmm. Like right now, the East is kind of just all over the place behind the Celtics, and especially with the Embiid injury, there's a chance they fall a lot. I don't know.
That's probably preferable to what's happening in the West, though. I'm like a dog for the one seed, they would have like a cushion on the one seed, obviously, in over in the West, but like instead of just like looking over your shoulder constantly, and like you said, Jay, like when they played poorly out of the All-Star break, like part of that dropping to the two seed was the Bucks just went on this, I forgot what it was, but it was like a 13 game winning streak or something, right, at the end of last year. And then they pretty much took the one seed. And the thing that really struck me after that was like reading about, or I forgot, someone might have said it, but they were like, the Celtics were a little shocked that they weren't the one seed, just because, like, remember Joe coached the All-Star game, like they pretty comfortably had it for most of the season until the Bucks went on a run. So this year, obviously, that probably isn't going to happen unless the Celtics do something poorly, and then the Doc Rivers led Bucks does something crazy, and I just don't quite see that in the future.
Who do you see, Suichi, even amidst this East mess, as like the top foe right now? Is it still the Bucks in your mind for the Celtics slides when push comes to shove? Is like the Cavs run here kind of done anything for you, or are you still kind of like waiting and seeing with that?
I'm not sure. I think it has to be the Bucks, just because like the Cavs, like if you look at their schedule during their crazy run, it wasn't necessarily the hardest, the most difficult. So I'm a little bit skeptical on that. Like I'm a little bit skeptical about the Knicks. Like they need to get healthy, but I don't think Thibs can like do that, I guess, because of his coaching style. Like I just think that's Thibs' ball, like they're just going to be a little bit banged up. Like I just don't trust the Sixers. I think it still has to be the Bucks, but that's not like a confident. It's the Milwaukee Bucks. It's more of a, you never know, like Dame could go off for a series, right? Like Dame could average like 32 over a series, and you're kind of like, oh, holy shit, where has this been all season? Like he's, getting up there in age. So, but yeah, I would say the Bucks followed by probably the Knicks and then the Cavs, but I'm not.
The Heat still have to be mentioned too. The Heat.
Yeah, I guess
the Heat
so,
will
yeah.
always have to be mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm on board with the Knicks being the chief challenger right now.
Ooh.
Okay.
I think I am. And obviously, like they have to get healthy. They have to have everybody available. But they're super deep. And then, to me, if I were coaching against this Celtics team, I would want to have a really big physical team that could try to wear on them and would have a lot of options to guard all their post-ups and all their big wings, everything like that. And the Knicks are loaded with guys like that. They have Jalen Brunson, who can orchestrate everything, and then just a whole bunch of muscle around him, and veterans around him, and And so I'm kind of on board with them being the second choice in the East right now, with the caveat that the Bucks could get it together and then they'd be super dangerous. And the 76ers, if Embiid is right, will also have a say in that. I don't really believe in the Cavs yet.
Yeah, I don't really.
They've been amazing.
Yeah, my thing with the Knicks and physicality, I guess this is the Knicks comment, it's more of a Celtics comment. Like, I'm super curious to see what Kristaps looks like in the playoffs. Like, remember during his opening press conference, I forgot who asked it, but it was basically like, are you sure you're going to perform in the playoffs? And he was like, I'm not sure. And like, I'm not sure he is, you know? And like, he was very honest about it. And like, if he's going to be honest about it, you know? Like, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have nearly as much playoff experience, obviously, as a Celtics core. So I'm just like super curious about that, just because like, obviously Kristaps Porzingis post-ups have been pretty much a Celtics like hack this season. What is that going to look like in the playoffs when, you know, it's going to just, they're going to wear, trying to wear him down. I feel like if I was a playoff opponent, you know, game planning for the Celtics, like that would probably be at near the top of my list. Like, how much can I wear down Kristaps Porzingis over a 6 or 7 game series? And you know, if he's already worn, you know, if it's the East Finals and Kristaps is already worn down from 2 very physical playoff series, like that's where I have, like, I guess kind of a question mark or a curiosity point at this point, just because he's been awesome during the regular season, but like, obviously the playoffs are a different animal and the refing, you know, officials change everything. So that's, you know, I told a few friends and I'm like, how's Kristaps gonna look? We'll see. Like, I'm super curious about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a situation with him where the Celtics should have enough around him where that's, even if he has to ease his way in terms of like figuring out what he can and can't do in the playoffs, like they have been safeguarding it. But you're right, like, just given his impact against teams like that, for against a team like Miami, for instance, it's like he is kind of the focal point in terms of what's changed for the Celtics this year against teams like that and how to combat, you know, Tatum and Brown over the years. It's like, all right, if Porzingis is hitting those threes or, you know, just feasting on post-ups in the, at the free throw line, then you really don't have a defense against this team. But if he starts getting hesitant in those spots or struggles more defensively than we've seen during the regular season on the perimeter, that's when you're like, okay, this is where things could get at least a little more dicey from where the Celtics are through 55 games here. But I think it's a good point by you, Sweetie.
Well done, Sweetie.
I appreciate it. Now I know why I'm a repeat guest.
This is true. You got anything else for him, Jay?
I got nothing. I got nothing.
We need some games, damn it. We need games.
I know. Yeah, it's tough to have a daily show
without anything to talk about.
It really is.
But they're going to be coming fast and furious here.
We could just yell about Doc Rivers like everyone else seems to do.
Yeah, what's your Doc Rivers take, Sweetie?
Pretty much the same as everyone else's. Like, what the hell are you doing? Is my like question. You know what I like? I just don't understand why it's productive to go on the record and be like, I told Kawhi this about Shea, and I told the Bucks ownership this, and then that's XYZ, and then JJ Redick is. It just doesn't seem like very like productive, I guess. Like, don't you like? I would probably lay low. You know, in some ways, like the Celtics staff not being available this All-Star break was like a good thing for them, because then Doc does that with the Bucks and everything. And then I know Celtics fans loved Wick getting the reference call or whatever from the Bucks ownership and everything. So it's been a kind of a rough week or two, I feel like, for like the Bucks front office ownership group, just because of like everything that's happened.
It just seems like he's so intent on shaping the narrative the way that he wants it, that he's turned it entirely against him. If he had just laid low and not said all this stuff, people would say, yeah, it was a tough job. They don't have a lot of defensive personnel. They they clearly like have some stuff to figure out over there. Yeah, it's going to be tough to lead that team to a championship, even though when Giannis is around and he's in his prime, that's going to be the expectation. But instead, he's just come up with excuse after excuse. And J.J. Redick is right. J.J. Redick is 100% right. That dude does not ever seem to hold himself accountable. You can look at the clip of him when he started talking about all his 3-1 blown leads, and he's like, go look at the Magic roster, just throwing his entire team under the bus from like 2000. Like, poor Darryl Armstrong and Ben, I think Ben Wallace is on that team. Who else is on that team? Just a random collection of guys. But still, it's like, Look at yourself sometime. I can remember the Game 7 press conference before Game 7 against the Celtics this past year.
Yeah.
It was – they came out with the report that the Sixers had gone like a – they'd bad – more bad calls had gone against the Sixers in Game 6. So the first question was Doc being like, oh, yeah, it's really disappointing that so many bad calls went against us in the last game. Excuse. Later on, he's talking about it. And he brings up how their shot quality was better than the Celtics and then said in Game 6 and then said no comments. Like, you fucking lost Game 6. You scored like 2 points over the last 4 minutes of that game. Joel Embiid, I don't think he really touched it during that stretch. Jason Tatum, who was bad for the first 44 minutes, totally dominated the end of that stretch. This is reality, Doc. Like, just, and he was talking about stuff. That stuff before Game 7, it was almost as if to set himself up. Like, if we lose, actually, it wasn't my fault. Actually, it was the ref's fault in Game 6. It was shot quality, shot luck. It's like, just take it on the chest, Doc. For once, take it on the chest. Stand up. And
it's not happening.
Austin Rivers saying he's the only one held accountable. Because he gets fired? That's fine. Someone else is holding him. Hold yourself accountable. You've thrown Ben Simmons under the bus. You've thrown your entire Magic team under the bus. You have gone out. And there are people, especially in Boston, who really love Doc Rivers. And I think he was the right coach for that 2008 team. I think lately there have been a lot of excuses. A lot of excuses. But that's my whole Doc Rivers.
I came from the soul. I'm like impressed.
He was ready for that.
You were like, oh man, he's been stewing on this take.
I went back today and listened to his press conference from before Game 7.
Wow.
Because I didn't have a transcript of it and I wanted to remember exactly what he said. And sure enough, like, first question was about the calls from Game 6. And he was open about it. He was not like, we're focused on Game 7. That shit doesn't matter anymore. We fucking lost that game. It truly doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. He went on a long talk about it, then later brought up the shot quality on his own. It's like, Doc, get your team ready, get your team resilient.
He's trying to save his job.
It's pretty shameless.
Didn't work.
Probably should have won Game 6, honestly.
Yeah.
No, definitely should have won Game 6. They had a better shot quality per Doc Rivers.
But this is why we need Celtics Bucks to play each other this postseason for the content.
In terms of you can go Heat, Bucks, Knicks or something crazy, and then Celtics fans will be swimming in the content at least.
Adrian Griffin to Doc is a nice content upgrade for us.
Huge content upgrade. Huge.
All right. Well, that will put a bow on this one. We'll be back with more Doc Hawk takes tomorrow, and maybe some Celtics Bulls recap. Thanks to Suichi Terada for joining us here. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Suichi Terada, SUICHI TERADA. If you aren't already, you should be one of the best on the beat. Thanks again for CLNS for hosting us here. Thanks to FanDuel for your sponsor for this show. And we'll be back with you guys live after the Celtics return to action against the Bulls on Thursday night. Again, thank for Jake King, for Sam Jan Packard, for myself, Brian Robb, thanks for listening to Still Podable, and we will talk to you guys after Thursday night.
Yeah, buddy.